John McEwen getting set to play the Bighorn Mountain Festival in Buffalo, July 20th and 21st. So happy to be talking with John McEwen. And John, a pleasure to have you on, and really love the story. What a history. Didn't know you had that Leon Russell connection, too.
It's very strange. Throughout the 50 years of my time with Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, I spent a lot of it pursuing other situations, and very grateful for the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band years, for sure, because it put me in front of a lot of people. And I think you're referring to one of the stories in my book, The Life I've Picked.
I first saw you at the last show at the Cowtown Ballroom. I had to look up the date. My memory is not that good. September 16th, 1974, you closed the Cowtown Ballroom down with Brewer and Shipley, and I'll never forget, I believe it was Diggy Liggy Lie. You came storming across the stage with your fiddle, and that was an indelible memory, just the first time I saw the band.
Yeah, and it would usually jump off the stage for Battle of New Orleans as it went crazy. For the people listening, he's referring to the Cowtown Ballroom in Kansas City, which was a magic room for about 4 years that was supposed to hold 1,800 people, but they usually stuffed 2,200 into it. It was so crowded you couldn't laugh ho, ho, ho. You had to laugh hee, hee, hee. And it was just a wonderful time. And Cowtown Ballroom had everybody that was coming up at the time, from Alice Cooper and Leon Russell and all kinds of people.
Yeah, I think B.B. King even played there.
Yeah, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band played more shows there than any other act. In fact, we opened it and closed it.
Tell us about the band you'll be playing with at the Bighorn Mountain Festival in Buffalo, the String Wizards.
Well, I'm really excited. I use the name String Wizards because it's like a movable feast. Sometimes I have different people that I've incorporated. And this trip, I'm bringing John Cable, who is a previous Nitty Gritty Dirt Band member, an alumni, you might say. He sings a song that nobody's ever heard that goes over like the hits that we do. And he's just a wonderful singer-player. And he was in the band in the 70s. He was there when we went to Russia in 1977, the first American band to go there. We did 28 shows. And another player is Craig Eastman, who's all these people are available to see on the internet. Craig Eastman is a master fiddler specializing in Celtic music, and I've played with him for, at least 20 years off and on in different situations. And then the other person is my son, Jonathan McEwen, who's a great guitar player and singer. And let's put it this way, Dave Mason used Jonathan to play lead guitar on his last album.
Wow.
Sing Harmony.
That is great.
And Mason did one of his songs. And Jonathan's had record success. And this show is exciting to me to play in the middle of Wyoming on a really cool festival with a bunch of great people. I get to do a workshop on Saturday about 1 o'clock, I think it is. That's going to be fun. We'll be burning some bluegrass and dirt band favorites.
Great.
I put the tick in eclectic. So doing some of that.
I wanted to ask you, how did you actually get started playing music? At what point as a youngster?
At 17 years old, I was learning the guitar because my brother played guitar. I thought, well, maybe I could do that. And for 6 months, I couldn't play anything that he didn't play. So I was losing interest. And then I saw a group called the Dillards in 1960. I don't know for sure, 63 or 4. And Doug Dillard was just a master on the banjo, and the group was funny, and their bluegrass from Missouri was absolutely swept me away. And that's why I started. I knew then that I wouldn't be doing magic, and I was working in the magic shop in Disneyland, kind of thinking about being in show business as a magician, but I didn't think I was good enough. I'm pretty good. I can knock your socks off with some card tricks and a couple other things, but I'm not good enough. I knew that, you know. But then music came along, and the magic just kind of took a back seat. And then after a couple of years of playing, I played in 4 different situations, and along came Nitty Gritty Dirt Band in 1966. And that just became my life for so long.
Well, you've picked up, also play the fiddle and the mandolin as well with the band, right?
Yes, and lap slide guitar and regular guitar. It's really fun. I'm really grateful to be playing at this stage of my career, which is, to me, the most exciting one.
I want to go back to something in your story. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band opened for Merle Travis, I believe at the Ash Grove in L.A. Merle was one of the many musicians on Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Yep.
And, of course, a landmark album. And for those not familiar, you guys were young musicians labeled Longhairs, and you partnered with an older generation of musicians like Earl Scruggs, Doc Watson, Jimmy Martin, Vassar Clemens. What sparked the idea for that album?
I wanted to record with Earl Scruggs. It was that simple. I've been getting to be friends with him. We met in 1970. I'll send you the video. I have that on. Your people can go look at it.
Cool.
My brother had a video camera the night Earl Scruggs came to meet me at Vanderbilt University for the Dirt Band show. So I got to start getting to know Earl after he came to see us. And 6 months after that meeting, I asked him if he'd record with Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. He said, I'd be proud to. And a week later, Doc Watson was playing the same club. And I got my nerve up to ask him. And his son Merle was really excited because, oh, this would be good for Daddy because the folk music thing is kind of dying off and the crowds are getting smaller. So this was 1971. And 8 weeks later, we started recording. And thanks to Earl Scruggs, we got Maybelle Carter and Vassar Clements and Jimmy Martin. And my brother called up Merle Travis. And for people that don't know Merle Travis, it's really something to be in a studio with somebody that has a guitar style named after him.
Whose idea was it to include the conversation leading up to the songs and the recording?
Prior to recording the album in the studio, my brother said, we've got to capture all this. And both of us agreed that the talking of people on records is just as compelling as the music. In fact, if you're into the music and big fan follower, you want to hear them talk. Bill wanted a tape recorder running all the time, so he ran one at 3 3/4, or 3 7/8, just to capture everything between songs. And then he took all that tape and made notes of what it was and edited all those pieces in. And it was a masterful job of editing that made you feel like you were there. A really good example is one of my favorite is when Maybelle and Doc are talking about Keep on the Sunny Side.
I may do Wildwood Flower on the old harp if y'all don't mind. I've never recorded it on the old harp, and I've done it with a guitar about a dozen times. But and I do it in F standard. You know, and I'll probably do it in F standard key on the auto harp. And thinking tonight of my blue eyes, I'll have to do it the same place. Yeah. And then I don't know where we'll do Will a Circle Be Unbroken. If everybody sings it, you just, you know, get the key that suits everybody.
Maybelle, do you remember the old ending you folks put on that thing?
I know I started on the old record, I started it like this.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, the sunny side we also may view. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side. If we'll keep on the sunny side of life.
Keep on the Sunny Side, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band with Mother Maybelle Carter. I'm Grady Kirkpatrick talking with John McEwen from the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, getting set to play the Bighorn Mountain Festival, July 20th and 21st. John McEwen and the String Wizards. And that was an incredibly influential album. What was it about that record that you think most influenced both music fans and musicians over the years?
Well, it was a one-of-a-kind. It was a multi-generational album that had a bunch of these country rock folk music hippies that had three records on the radio at the time, House of Two Corner, Mr. Bojangles, and some of Shelley's Blues, and were out on the road beating the bushes with that music. For some reason, coming together with a bunch of people that had set the template for country music. Mother Maybelle Carter and the Carter family created basically country music in 1927 when she first recorded Keep on the Sunny Side.
Wow. Talk about history.
We were 42 years later, you know. And Earl, Sprague-style banjo. There was a wall around Nashville that people didn't feel like they could. You could like the music, but you weren't sure you could talk to those people. It's a tough question to answer because
sure.
The audience does answer it many ways.
Oh, yeah.
I've had audience people have told me, I was listening to this album in my bedroom. My dad stuck his head in and said, what are you listening to? And I told him, I thought he was upset because, no, I love that music. It's the first time we talked in years. And he said, we listened to the whole album and we've been good buddies ever since. There's something about Vietnam veterans saying, boy, am I glad I got home and the Circle album was out because it just made me feel good. It's a generational. I mean, keep in mind, it was recorded at a very high energy, negative time in the country. It was recorded August of 71. You know, the Vietnam War was really heating up. And there was people saying, we got to fight. We can't fight. We got to fight. There were churches burning. You know, mm-hmm. Robert Kennedy had recently been assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
We played that room that he was killed in the next night, the Ambassador's Hotel.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And, it was really a different time. We played the room that Robert Kennedy, on the stage, he last spoke on, the night, less than 24 hours later.
Wow. And
there was a high school prom we had been booked on, you know, and they had yellow tape up in the hallway. Don't walk over there. People think there's a lot of turmoil now. There's a lot of dissidents now, but they forget that the country has been great and it has problems. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't get on a political one way or another, but I can say we're in the height of political unrest and, you know, the war, the president was lying. Of course, some things never change, but I like to go along with what Mark Twain said in 1858, I think it was. Mark Twain said, politicians and diapers, you change them often for the same reason. Now, that kind of says it for both sides. The nature of this music and the history of the good part of America that it reflected, that came together in the studio, and age and background didn't matter. We were all playing together.
I'm Grady Kirkpatrick talking with John McEwen, set to play the Bighorn Mountain Festival in Buffalo, July 20th and 21st. So who was Uncle Charlie and his dog Teddy?
Uncle Charlie was my brother's wife's uncle, so kind of an uncle-in-law. And Bill was producing that record, my brother, who also produced the Circle album. And we had the finished mix of an album that had all those songs on it. And we were sitting around Laurel Canyon one night, well, the night the final mastering mix was done. And we played the album through and really liked it. This is really good. But Bill's going, you know, it's just a record of good songs. Look at the Uncle Charlie tapes. He recorded this guy 5 years earlier, before there was a dirt band. This old guy up in Fresno, California, that lived in a trailer, had a guitar, and he recorded him playing and singing and doing different things. And he said, go to the part where he's getting Teddy out from under the couch.
Teddy, come in. Come on. Come on out from under there. You know, sit down. Sit down, Teddy. Now here, I want you to sing. Sing these folks' song. Sing the old Rugged Cross. Listen, chord with this now. Here. Oh, yo, do, do. Sing.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you in worn-out shoes, silver hair and ragged shirt and baggy pants, the old soft shoe. He jumped so high, he jumped so high, and then he lightly touched down. Said his name Bojangles and he danced a lick across the cell. He grabbed his pants and feathered stance, whoa, he jumped so high. And then he clicked his heels. He let go a laugh, he let go a laugh. Shook back his clothes all around. Mr. Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles, Mr. Bojangles, dance.
John, you lived in L.A. where many musicians were either already there or migrated. Many were on the East Coast or maybe Nashville or Austin. What influenced your eventual move to Colorado?
And around 1971, there was a giant earthquake, the Valley earthquake in Northridge. And I was on the road with the band, and none of us could reach home, could reach who we were either family with or married to or whatever, for like almost 3 days.
Wow.
And when we did, everybody there said, I want to get out of here.
That's a pretty good reason.
I think back a week later. We'd been to Colorado a couple times and always commented about what a great place to live this probably is. What a nice place. Oh, look at those beautiful mountains. The air sure is good. Not like that skanky L.A. air. So we moved. And en masse, went to Evergreen and a couple guys went to Aspen.
I want to play one of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band songs. I love the vocals of Jimmy Ibbotson. On Rippling Waters, and the song opens with...
I knew you'd play that one.
It opens with the sound effects of the Rippling Waters, of course. Kind of reminds us of the streams and rivers and the Rocky Mountains, and then your mandolin comes in.
When Jimmy Ibbotson came into the group with the Uncle Charlie album, it was our fifth album in our fourth year, and it was a new addition. We needed a singing drummer. Well, he wrote some of the better songs and became kind of, in my opinion, the best voice of the dirt band. And here he is singing Rippling Waters.
got rippling water to wake me to the morning, my woman in love. And tall pine trees are pointing us easily to heaven above. Blue spruce flaming on the grate in the evening takes the chill away fine. Cut the telephone line and the story's the same. There's a worn red chair by the window that we found at a sale down the way, when some old women said that they needed more room for the winter. But people like pulling out the stuff and when they sit down, and so it passes the time. Cut the telephone line and the story's the same. Start to flutter when I hear you say that you feel too good to go away. And you make me feel fine, and you've made my world a warmer place by the sparkling of your diamond face on a frayed spot with a little lace. And you make me feel fine, warm as the mountain sunshine on the edge of the snow line.
Now, when you lived in Colorado, I think one of your later albums was Woody Creek, and I believe that was the residence of Hunter S. Thompson. Did you hang out with Hunter much?
I never met Hunter Thompson, but he lived next door to Jimmy Evanson. And we recorded that album in Woody Creek, in Jimmy's house, set up studio equipment. This was 40 years after the Uncle Charlie album. It was much easier to have recording equipment that was portable and sounded good. And we spent a week up there recording the Woody Creek album.
You knew Steve Martin back in the day and taught him maybe a bit on the banjo that he used in his early comedy routines. Were you surprised when he started recording and playing with the Steep Canyon Rangers?
Well, Steve Martin and I met in high school years when we were both trying to get a job in Disneyland, which we did at 16 years old. And we worked there for a few years and hung out together and played. And then along came the banjo, and I was able to pick things up quicker than him, so I'd show him things. He's often said that I taught him how to play, but I don't know. It was an influence. And my brother started managing him when he went to be a solo performer, when he finally it must have been 6 years later. And then he started playing the banjo more and using it in his act. He's always serious about it, and people didn't think he was really, but he really wanted to be a banjo player. And time went on, and 5 years ago or so, maybe six now, I produced his album, The Crow, New Songs with the Five-String Banjo, and we won a Grammy with that. And right after that, he called me to say he'd found a group in North Carolina that he played with just by chance, and Steep Canyon Rangers, and they kind of then went off in that direction. They're very good.
Yeah, we got to see them in Buffalo at the Bighorn Mountain Festival a few summers back. Oh. They actually stopped in studio and played a fine band. And we're certainly looking forward to John McEwen and the String Wizards coming up the weekend of July 20th and 21st. Bighorn Mountain Festival, Buffalo, Wyoming. You can find a link on our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org or bighornmountainfestival.com. John McEwen, it's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Well, we're looking forward to being there,